Well, welcome back to the Ministry Without Hating It podcast, a ministry of Odyssey Haven Coaching and Counseling dedicated to the pursuit of answering the question, is it possible to do ministry without hating it? We have a theory that it just might be. I am Chad Garrison. I am back here with my friend, my buddy, my partner, Brenton Hill. We are back officially for season two, Brenton.
Yeah, welcome.
We made it. Somehow we made it. Just to kind of give a little background on the last episode, was supposed to be technically the last episode of the first season, and ministry happened. We'll just say it that way, right? And so this is our first kind of official one back, and we're excited about that. We had a great conversation with our friend, pastor, coach, consultant, all kinds of things, Mr. Trey Abney. It was a great conversation, wasn't it?
Yep. It was absolutely wonderful. Another page of notes taken.
Yeah.
Through our conversation.
Yeah. We will do our best to even hit some of the resources and things that he talks about. And he talks about several within this interview. But just really appreciate Trey really sat down with us. We started, the conversation went from talking about favorite sandwiches to, I'm sensing a new theme here, by the way, sandwiches within our podcast, mm-hmm. which is totally fine. I'm on the sandwich train. But that it really moved into, especially as we entered this new year with leadership and establishing healthy rhythms and obedience to what God is saying and people pleasing. I mean, all of the things that come with ministry, he just really attacked it, but also got to the humanity of it. I'm just really excited for people to hear this.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, without further ado, then we had some shifts in our production and how we're doing things, and even how the interviews go. And we're excited to unleash those upon you within this new season as well. And so, without further ado, please enjoy our interview, our conversation with our friend Trey Abney. Well, Trey, it's good to have you on the Ministry Without Hating It podcast. We like to start off with some questions, but we're starting with actually something a little bit different, especially since we're in this new season. It's something we're calling the kickoff questionnaire, and that is questions that have nothing to do with ministry but need to be asked anyway. All right.
Love it.
Wonderful. All right. So the first question then we have for you is, describe your perfect sandwich.
I would have to go with a really good Reuben.
Okay.
Good sauerkraut, good corned beef, good rye, good Thousand Island. The funny part is none of those I like individually, but corporately they make a great sandwich.
Interesting. So is that homemade, or is that something that is there?
No,
some place?
No. You're going to try to find a deli, and especially if it's a specific kind of ethnic deli, you definitely want to have a Reuben there.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm making notes now, mental notes. All right. So next question then, if you had a superpower, what would that be?
Oh, that's good. Helping people see the pain that keeps them from growing.
Whoa.
Right there. We went deep fast.
See, it's not like flying or shooting lasers from my eyes. It's seeing into your soul. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I know if I had those kind, I wouldn't use them productively. That's the
yeah. One's selfish, one's like help the betterment for the betterment of mankind. So,
which is the definition of a superhero. So, congratulations.
Right. Yeah. There you go.
You've passed. Okay, then if you could go to any sports event, no cost to you, which would it be?
As a University of Georgia football fan. The national championship game a couple of days ago would have been really fun.
Yeah.
I have been to several SEC championship games, and they are fun, but I haven't been to the new Mercedes-Benz Stadium. So I would probably pick a bowl game or a championship in Mercedes-Benz.
Okay. Well, that's fair. You really think that game being there in person would have been fun to watch?
Absolutely.
65-7.
I fully enjoyed every minute of that game. Now I will throw in one additional one.
Okay.
It is a new one for my wife and I. I would love to go to the racetrack and watch a match with Wrexham FC.
Yes.
So that is one of our new favorite sports clubs is Wrexham FC.
Me too. It's actually my brother-in-law and I, that's kind of on our bucket list is to get out there sometime in our life. I would love to do that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. Let me shift a little bit then. What is your biggest goal or goals heading into this year?
Just to have a balanced approach to my personal health and development. I've had a good track record in one area or another. Maybe I've done really well in my emotional health, but I haven't grown intellectually as much as I want to or focused on my personal health or, but trying to have a totality of that in this year, where physically, emotionally, spiritually, and intellectually, I'm all have a growth trajectory throughout the whole year.
All right. So what was this? 10 days in? We're recording this in January. So how is that going so far?
Going well. I have already read a couple of books and I'm reading three more and I don't get overly impressed. They're small books. So one of them is actually a children's book about seasons that just really goes back through that Ecclesiastes passage and really helps you think through how God intended those rhythms. The other is One Word by John Gordon. That is something we always focus on in any of the faith communities we lead is really focusing on what is the one word and listening to God for that new season. And then reading a couple of different leadership books and then reading personally, what I discovered is I have a tendency to get so obsessive about leadership and health that I become flat. I don't read for just enjoyment. So one of my goals going into this year was to read novels, and I've already read one novel by a Christian gentleman who's a former military, but it's a military series about David's mighty men and their humanity. And it's really brought some texture, some depth, some complexity to biblical figures that maybe you've never thought of before. And he pointed some things out. He even said, David has some character abnormalities as he gets older. We don't have to even go into those. We know what those are. He said, I wonder if some of those are actually PTSD from David being in battle so much.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And it really made me stop and see David as a human being again.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And conversely, it made me stop and go, no, I'm a human being.
Yeah.
Where are these things that I have outliers in my life that pop up? And I'm like, where does that come from? Oh, is that PTSD from some wounding I haven't even recognized because I've flattened myself out too much. I haven't given myself texture.
Wow. What's the name of that series?
It's called Covenant of War. I can look up the name of the author.
Oh, sure. Huh.
But yeah, it's a really good series. Really good.
Okay.
Series. You know, when you don't read a lot of fiction, sometimes you look at fiction and you're like, okay, this is a little dramatic. But then I go, wait a minute, life is this dramatic.
That's right.
Yeah. Yep.
That's right. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I'm impressed because all I've read is some of the tracts that we still have sitting out in our foyer this year. So
those are definitely dramatic, especially if it's the chick tracts.
Yeah.
I was just going to agree. Emotionally wounding too. So
this, yeah, definitely. I was just going to agree with you. The, cause I've kind of taken a break from some of the leadership and development stuff too. And I'm actually revisiting the Lord of the Rings, but the audio version and Andy Serkis, the way he reads it, it's like he's doing impressions throughout the whole thing. And it's been a really nice, just kind of taking me out of it, you know, kind of a thing just to enjoy it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so important that we want to have trajectories in our lives that are helping us grow. But so often we just default to our leadership identity, not our humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And good. Adding that back really helps us become the human beings God designed us to be.
That's good. Man, he's even in the kickoff question. The minute we found a way to bring ministry back into this. How fun is that? Yeah. You're good, Trey. Yeah. You're good.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this then: what do you find exciting for you in life, or you know, we can go into ministry if you'd like, or anything. What's exciting you right now?
It's going to sound funny. What's this exciting me is in the season of life I'm in. I get to have ministry look multiple different ways. I'm getting to do coaching, consulting. You know, I don't preach like I used to. I'm not a senior pastor of a traditional church anymore. But getting to do, you know, speaking, leading workshops and leading retreats and using more of the totality of my gifting in this season of life is something that I really am enjoying. But I will say it took an 18-month journey to get here. All of us say, you know, we don't wrap our identity around titles and roles, but we don't realize how much we have until those prescribed responsibilities aren't there anymore. Mm-hmm. And now when you're having to trust God and say, okay, I'm here and I'm having to be patient and doors are opening that seem different or new. Sometimes we don't see that as God as much as the familiar doors or paths or responsibilities we've had in the past. So I've spent 18 months really learning that process.
Wow. So it's interesting. It's actually a nice segue when you talk about how it has shifted for you. So then when we say the word ministry, what does that actually mean to you then?
For me, ministry has come to mean something as simple as living out the identity God's given me.
Okay. And how does that play out?
It plays out in everything from being a human being, a husband, a father, a friend, then possibly, you know, what we consider traditionally teaching, leading, preaching, you know, discipling, mentoring, all those things. But ministry has become more of who I am, not what I do.
Yeah. But I wonder if there's any, maybe more of your own journey that you feel like that has shaped your definition or even, you know, maybe unpacking the last 18 months a little bit more.
Sure.
And how you've gotten to that space.
Sure. So 18 months ago, my wife and I moved from Atlanta to Southwest Virginia for her to take a position at a university, a Virginia campus of a California university. And so we moved geographically. We had already become very focused on and involved in technology-based ministry. But in that move, now it's not only a philosophical move of who of how you live your life. Now it's a physical move too. And so all sense of familiarity and comfort and rhythms of life are different. And what I realized is that God has in my life used moves of roles or ministry appointments or geography as precursors to a season of ministry. And what I mean by that is I turned 53 in October. So I am in that midlife, a lot of leaders call that third transition, where now you're looking at that next 20 years of ministry that will probably not be positionally oriented, but it will be gifting oriented, where you are making a difference, not in a traditional ministry role, but in the society as a whole. Hmm. And what I had to do was recraft what I had been taught in my formation process was ministry, because I came out of a very traditional background where ministry, even in my licensing, I had the gentleman ask the question, and this will kind of tell you how old a formation it was. He goes, if you could do anything other than preach, could you do it? And I was like, yeah, I can do plenty of things. But in his mind, he was saying, if you can't have a pulpit role, can you live? Are you a person? And that antiquated understanding of ministry that was so vocationally and task specific. It didn't see ministry as your personhood in the culture and in the society and where you lived. So now I get to teach college courses. I get to go lead workshops for leaders, you know, that are between 55 and 75 that are looking at what does that next season of life look like? And if I've defined my identity by this role and this title, what is the deep fear that won't let me let go of that? What are the heart's desires I've never gotten to do because this role didn't allow me to do it? Where are all the places that are desperate for ministry, but will never be a congregation?
Right.
And so as you're cultivating this in people's lives, you help them to recognize the fear of change, but realize the things that are desires of their heart that God saved for that next season of life. And now they're getting to express those and use those in ways that positions in vocational ministry often did not allow them to.
So really just it expands greatly. Like it actually it sounds like it obliterates the box, right? Of absolutely. Of ministry.
Where your vocational role may have been limited to a few hundred people, you know, occasionally 1,000 people. You now may minister to hundreds a week. Mm-hmm. That, you know, and that may never step through the doors of what we would traditionally call a church.
Yeah.
But are open mm-hmm. to faith in ways that in past times, people have not been.
Right. Yeah. Wow. So I'm curious then, because it's really interesting, because I feel like we talk about the word success, particularly mm-hmm. in ministry, that always feels like a moving target.
Right.
And especially even to your context. So speaking to what you're talking about as ministry is for you now, then what does success in your mind look like, or what is your target?
So this is going to sound very simplistic and very specific at the same time. Success is obedience in what Jesus is telling me to do in this season.
Okay.
And success is being fully present with who he sends me to now. And so I get the joy of having that be students who are traditional college students that I get to help disciple or and teach classes with, up to adults who are in their 50s, 60s, and 70s who are looking at the next season of life and being fully present with them in that moment and not needing future outcomes to define success for me, but being present where I am and doing what Jesus has told me to do as success.
I think that's great. And I love the simple. In fact, I love that one especially because I think any ministry leader can take that as your, you know, you're a church planner. I've got church planning in my history as well. And sometimes that was success is just being obedient.
Yeah.
Because you don't see it anywhere else, right? Yeah. I love that. I love that. Thank you for sharing that. So then when I ask you the question, and you can talk more recent, or you can be more kind of throughout history. But how have you learned to do ministry without hating it?
That's a great question. I the simple answer is I abandoned everyone else's definitions.
Okay.
In development psychology, it's called differentiation. It means that you learn to live in the words of Edwin Freeman with a non-anxious presence. And to kind of unpack that, you live with an internal peace that is not influenced or affected by the uncertainty or the frustration or the expectation or the drama that exists outside of you. One of the things I had to learn in ministry is, one, it's never done. I had a finish mindset that I'm going to do this and this will be set and I can move on to the next thing. I had to realize that it's never done. Second is I had to come to the realization is I would disappoint the majority of people. And that was normal. Jesus disappointed the majority of people. And differentiation says, I can live at peace even if people are disappointed or frustrated by my decision. Just to give a little simple story, we had interns for years at our church, and I had this one intern that he had the greatest pure heart ever, just huge guy, gentle heart, loving. And he came to me one day really upset and he closed my office door and he said, I just need you to know something. I said, okay. He goes, there's a lot of people upset. And I said, okay. And he goes, I just want you to know. I'm like, okay. And he goes, you know? And I'm like, yeah, I'm a leader. And he looked at me shocked. And I said, let me give you my philosophy about leadership. And he said, okay. I said, I look at the people I'm leading in thirds. A third of the group will think you know what you're doing and they'll trust you. A third of the group will think you don't know if you know what you're doing and I don't know if you know what you're doing. But I'm going to keep following. And if it works, I was going to say you're right. And if it doesn't work, I was going to say I always knew you were wrong. And then there's a third who think you don't know what you're doing. And those thirds vary every day and with every decision.
That's right.
And so knowing that with every decision, there's going to be a percentage of people that are going to be highly disappointed or frustrated by my decisions helps me to understand my decision making is not a spectrum of approval. It is a spectrum of obedience. Mm-hmm. And that knowing that my sole source of approval, of self-worth, of inner peace comes from that obedience from Jesus. And then not sounding overly spiritual, but really spending time in the Gospels, looking at how often Jesus' choices left people disappointed, confused, frustrated, angry, and occasionally murderous.
Yeah,
we want to focus on the cross, but the cross is not the first time that there's an attempt to murder him.
Right.
It happened throughout his ministry. I might not get murdered, but if I'm at a congregationally led church, it might become a vote. And I need to know that. I need to live in the soberness of that awareness. But obedience leads me. Allows me to lead in a way that I live with an inner peace. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a long process that you work yourself to. A differentiation is a lifelong process. But it's, to oversimplify it, it mainly is addressing all the should haves and ought tos in your life. Whether those are from your family, from the group you're leading, from the organization you're a part of, wherever those come from, and really defining those and allowing the Holy Spirit to help you script those, write them out or become aware of them so that you can then assess them of, is this something I believe or is this something Jesus has asked me to do? And if those two aren't true, then you discard that sense of burden or responsibility.
Yeah. Wow. I'm just taking a moment because it's interesting on two fronts for me, anyways, personally, because I feel like I'm coming out of a season where I'm like, oh, I'm almost done. We've just had a lot of, ministry, just, pastoral care, things like that.
Yeah.
And you go, okay, I actually made a joke to one of our pastors. I said, I need things to just settle down. a bit, you know. But it's also freeing to hear you go, and it sounds funny to say, but freeing to go, it's not going to happen. You just have to, you're going to have to make that time. Cause I think about too, how often Jesus withdrew also in the midst of all that. And that was what was the enduring endurance for him. But then too, you know, you also have the, it's real easy to have the regret side of things. I wish I had done something different or had said something or acted or whatever. Right. But to bring it back to that space of, no, it's out of obedience. And I was being obedient in the time. And like you said, they may try to murder me. Right.
Yeah.
But, that's encouraging. That's really encouraging, especially even as you going back to how you defined ministry as just being present and being with people, in that space. And that's what the ministry is. It's not the stuff, the show, right? The services, the things like that. That's encouraging.
And I think what doesn't help us is most of us are primarily trained for activity.
Yeah.
Not personhood. And if we place ourselves on a path of personal development, it becomes more about identity and less about activity.
Yeah. That's good. That's good. You're hitting me right here today. Thank you. As you usually do, Trey. Thank you.
Yeah. I feel like a sponge today. Just keep talking.
It's good.
Bring it.
That's good.
So, you have the opportunity to coach and lead leaders, young, emerging, of all types of backgrounds and stuff. So what are some of the common themes that you, that you see through ministry leaders today?
Probably the two right now, I would say over the last 18 months, has been exhaustion and fear. Exhaustion because in some ways, the rest of the world got to exhale through COVID and really recalibrate in some ways. Some people found out they really didn't like to be with their family and wanted to go back to work. Some people, you know, found out they really liked to work from home. But there was still a slower pace of life. I can remember when COVID first happened, my wife and I were taking walks every night, long walks, because we had time. And the first time, probably after a month, when they kind of started reopening things and you heard traffic again for the first time. And you're like, oh, I didn't realize how much I was enjoying just the silence.
Yeah.
The conversations. And that was the rest of the world. People in ministry shifted into overdrive. They had to work to understand how to continue community formation and discipleship and technology and all of the responsibilities that were instantly thrust upon them. And so many people in ministry spent 12 to 18 months, depending on their location, working harder than they had ever worked before. And so they came out exhausted. And what it also stirred was a fear that we really weren't in control as much as we thought we were. And that pseudo control being revealed. I'll just give you a great leadership example right here. If I said, hey, I'm going to come work with your staff and we're going to develop a 3 to 5 year vision plan. You both just started smiling and I'm snickering.
Yeah, for sure.
But if I had said that 4 years ago, you would have said, oh yeah, we need to do that.
Yeah.
It was false security, but there was this sense of we knew where we were going. This fear is based in that we really don't know where we're going. And biblically, we should gain so much comfort from that. But because we had organized ourselves more around business practices than biblical practices in our leadership.
Yeah.
It's created fear in us. Hmm. We have a great, it's going to sound really funny, but a great sermon, a great message, a great principle, a great teaching for leaders right now is the call of the disciples at the Sea of Galilee. Come follow me.
Yeah.
Where are we going? When are we going to get there?
Yeah.
How are we get there? What is it going to look like when we get there? None of those things are answered by Jesus. And if we reflect back to when we, however you want to phrase it, surrendered to the call of Jesus, owned the call of Jesus, whatever term you like to use there, if we reflect back to it, we didn't need any of those answers then.
Yeah.
But somewhere along the way, we let non-biblical voices tell us we needed those things that Jesus never really thought was necessary.
Hmm.
And that false value system has made us susceptible to fear. And that fear has compounded our exhaustion.
Yeah.
So those are the two themes I've seen over the last 18 months from leaders.
So what, as you're working then, mm-hmm. I know you've talked a little bit about this, but what are some ways practically that you feel like that plays out as far as, you know, we actually even use that as our definition of disciple, of a disciple is mm-hmm. the come and follow me, I will make you, right? And then he sends, right? So, but how does that look practically then for the ministry leader as you've even walked with some of these leaders, you know, dealing with these same themes?
I think in a couple of, because so we're going to use two different aspects, and there are two different ways. The first is exhaustion. What it made us aware of is our need to change the rhythms of our life. We can use the Eugene Peterson line, and it's still one of the best lines, the unforced rhythms of grace.
Right.
What are the rhythms that you as a person in a family, you as a leader in a context, what is your rhythms? Because if you're there, your rhythm is a part of the corporate rhythm. And then what is the rhythm of the group that you're leading? Sometimes the healthiest things we can do is just less.
Yeah.
Just less.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so what do the rhythms need to look like to restore humanity, to restore vitality, to restore color and texture to life again.
Mm-hmm.
We used to joke about, you know, again, I'm older than both you guys, but we used to joke about guys playing golf a lot. Well, you know what? At least they were outside doing something.
That's right.
At least there was some mm-hmm. human activity away from technology. That, you know, what are the things you need to do that may not be quote unquote spiritual disciplines, but are life-giving realities of being human. So that's the exhaustion part. The fear part is really going back and identifying, when did you establish the belief system? When did you establish it and why? Where someone said to you, someone gave you a book, you were at a conference, you had a pastor or a mentor that established this belief system that was really based out of a corporate structure and model of organizational development, not a biblical framework of ministry. And say, was that really what Jesus believed, or was that just what that person, that book, that conference believed? and then really helping them recognize not only the ownership of that belief, but the consequences that belief has created over time. And in helping them own that, that fear is based in something that, that Jesus never asked them to do, or Jesus never asked them to be. And really helping them and going back to the simply come and follow me. And I'll change it a little, even Chad, from what you said. I think it's coming. I think it's following. I think it's becoming. And I think it's sending, all as a continual process.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we've missed it, is we made it an initiation process. Then for the rest of the time, it's me. No. It was that following. It was that becoming. It was that sending. It was that daily surrender again to hear and to lay down the familiar things, to lay down the nets, to lay down the bookkeeping for Matthew, to lay down, you know, the tax collecting for Zacharias. It was the laying the familiar things down daily and surrendering new to trust and love that Jesus has a plan for me greater than I can understand.
So I'm hearing, it's interesting. It just keeps coming back to that word obedience. Mm-hmm. I think that's what I keep hearing. It almost sounds too good to be true, right? Like, it can't be that simple, yeah. Right? You know, but you know, you think just how much, like you said, it's that control. And it also requires us having to look really deep inwardly as to, I love what you said. Where did that start? Where, you know, and even as you're saying that, I'm trying to like jog back in my mind. Okay. When did I start believing some of these things that are not what Jesus even ever intended for me? And that can be a daunting process. So what would you say to something like that? Like, where do I even begin with something like that?
Well, and I don't want to sound simplistic here. You can do a wonderful Bible study on the book of Acts about how little pre-planning is there.
Yeah.
If Acts is supposed to be the handbook of what the church does and who the church is, go in and look how much actual pre-planning takes place in Acts. Well, let's see. There's pre-planning for prayer. And outside of that, that's about it.
Yeah. Wait, you're speaking to an Enneagram 6 who's like freaking out a little bit. Like, wait, what do you mean you don't plan? What is that? Like,
it's a funny story. We just had a staff meeting and went over our next year calendar of our hopes and dreams of these are the things we'd like to accomplish. The very next day, I have two different ministry leaders come in my office and start talking to me, which upset everything that we had planned the night before for the entire year. I mean, that's pretty normal.
Yeah.
And has been part of the course for us. And so when we just kind of throw it all up in the air and go, okay, I guess this is where we're at and this is what we're doing.
Yeah. And I don't want to say you don't plan.
Sure.
No.
Sure.
I think what I'm saying is, I think we maybe set a plan, then we try to cut it in half. There was much more space for being present with Jesus and being present with people than activities. And the just having time together, just sharing meals, just being present was something that everyone came out of COVID valuing. Mm-hmm. But we worked really hard to reestablish what had been, not recognizing what actually was life-giving to us when we weren't doing
right
the other things.
Right. Right. Wow.
It's good.
Yeah, I'm just thinking for a second. Because you're right, there's a lot. I feel like I mean, there were several camps, especially in ministry. There were some that were like, I can't wait to get back to what it was. And then there were some that was like, I don't want to go back. But I think a lot of that core ties to kind of what you talked about earlier. It was the identity piece as well, is that I don't feel like I'm accomplished or actually even have value because I'm not doing what I used to do. Man, it was an interesting time, and I don't think we're fully out of it, honestly, but, you know, it's definitely an opportunity.
Yeah. I can identify when you were saying just disappointing people, is a thing that we need to be comfortable with, because coming out of the COVID, just the onslaught of leadership that required, just helping other people navigate, as a ministry leader, we weren't navigating our own stuff.
Yeah.
Often we were just helping everyone else. And then when having to make decisions, nothing anybody chose was going to be the right. It felt like there was no win, except for being obedient, and being obedient, it felt like it was a big loss.
Yeah.
As a leader.
Yeah.
I'm reading a great book right now called Lead Yourself First. And I wanted to get it because the great thing about it is not a Christian book. It is a leadership book. Written by two former Army officers, Raymond Kethledge, K-E-T-H-L-E-D-G-E, and Michael Irwin. And the book is about how leaders who lead significant things integrate isolation for reflection. And they make reference that neither claim to be Christian, but there's some elements that if they're not, I would be very surprised if not. But it was written as a business book. And what they talk about is that in isolation, there is the ability to what they said, they called it have intuition, what we would call discernment about what to do and how to do it. And they look at, Lincoln, Eisenhower, and Martin Luther King Jr., and how extended periods of isolation for reflection always were precursors to leadership choices that the majority of people would not agree with.
That sounds like another guy that we know. You know, Jesus.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Exactly. That's,
well, I also like it because it also gives me another just justification for being an introvert in some regards. Right.
Yeah.
Because I need my space to think. I mean, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned, you know, rhythms and getting away. And I incorporated actually during the COVID time as well. I had started just previous, but for my mental health, taking at least a daily walk, something, you know, depending on what was going on. I mean, there were sometimes in COVID, I took, you know, in COVID, during COVID time, I had, you know, three or four throughout a day. Right. But I've now noticed, when I don't have that, like if my rhythm is disrupted, even if it's just weather, you know, because I live in Iowa, and so that happens.
Yeah.
Right. I feel it. Like I feel it throughout the day and how important that is. And now, even as you're saying, it's an actual leadership principle.
Yeah.
You know, that we can even go back to our Savior with. Right. And
the amazing part is both of them are West Point graduates, and one of them now works in character development at West Point. And they teach isolation and reflection and intuition as part of leadership development at West Point.
That's awesome.
And so we would call it solitude and silence. We would call it discernment. And we would call it fortitude. to finish the task.
Yeah. Wow. That's good. Are there, just as we're talking about, especially now, kind of coming into a new season, you know, for most people, we mark that with the new year. We've talked about a few practices when it comes to implementing healthy rhythms, and you've talked about even some of your own personal. Are there some others that people really should be grabbing onto right now?
Yeah. So if we lean into, truly lean into the name January. I don't know if you know where the name January comes from. It comes from the Greek god and of Janus, which was a two-faced god, one that looked back and one that looked forward. So it was a head with two sides on it, two faces. And so January's intended purpose was to reflect over the past and to prepare for the future. That was what January actually meant. And so I think one of the things that we integrate or should integrate is just reflection. Over the last year, you know, historically it was called an examine, E-X-A-M-E-N. What was life giving? What was draining? When did I feel the closest to Jesus? When did I feel the farthest from Jesus? What in the rhythms or life of our of the group we're leading, it's ending. And let's let it die. It won't come back to life if we work harder, if we give it more money, if we give it more. It's just time. And let it end. Because what we don't let end and we drag into the future will actually rob us from what's supposed to grow going forward. And so January says there's this equal balance between reflection from the past and ending it, and then turning and looking to the prospects of the future. And living with that examine is such a wonderful way, because what most of us do is we spend the entire year trying to drag the past into the future. Parker Palmer has a great quote. He said, we can either stand at the door and bang on the door that's been closed in front of us, or we can turn around and look at the world that's been opened up to us. And when we learn to live in those reflective places where we stop and we look at the past and really let the Holy Spirit help us assess it, recognize what's come to an end, actually practice this crazy thing that Ecclesiastes says, that there's, you know, times and seasons, and there's times for endings and beginnings, and then turn to the future and really let God speak to us about the future. Not plan in our own initiative, but prepare in obedience about what's the future. Then we can live with anticipation, or if we want to use the term faith.
Yeah.
We're now living out of a directive from God. We're Abraham. It's time to leave the country of your fathers and move to a new place. We're ending one thing and we're beginning a new thing, but we're doing it in a posture of obedience and humility. In doing that, we get to live in the rhythm of what God has really taught us. You know, and Chad, this is the really funny part. You know, I turned 53 this year. One of my goals for my 53rd birthday was to run 5.3 miles in 8K. And so I started training, getting ready to run. And I'm not a small guy. Running, I mean, I played sports in high school. I played a little college football, you know. I've always had to run. I've never liked to run.
Right.
Yes.
But when I decided to run this time, I said, I'm going to run at a pace that I feel comfortable. I'm not going to try to run too fast. I'm not going to try to run too hard. I'm just going to relax. And for the first time in my life, I've actually gotten to where I enjoy running and I anticipate getting to go run. I wonder how many people in leadership struggle because they're trying to lead and live in someone else's pace. Versus living in the rhythm God designed for them and enjoying the journey as a part of it.
Yeah. Wow. That's good. Well, it just keeps tying back to obedience and actually having a rooted identity in who Christ says that you are. And therefore, it is, as you say, I mean, it's not just living, it's running in those unforced rhythms of grace, right? As you would even say.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Wow, wow, wow. Well, I want to be careful of your time here. Let's put it that way. Sure. But I wonder if you wouldn't mind just maybe talking a little bit about coaching for a second. Sure. 'Cause I know you're a coach, and I know some people, you know, I have a background with coaching as well, and I understand it, but there may be some people out there when they hear the word coach, life coach, or ministry coach and consultant, they go, why would I need that?
Sure.
Right.
I'm doing fine on my own.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly.
Or the one that I love to hear is, you know, I'll just do it. I'll just do what I'm supposed to do. And it's like, well, but you haven't. So that's some of the issue. So would you maybe just unpack as you would in the way that you would talk to somebody about coaching and specifically ministry leaders, why that's really a vital resource.
Sure. Absolutely. People. So, you know, when my wife and I do talk to leaders, one of the things we talk about is you need multiple people in your life. You need a mentor. And what mentors do is mentors put in, they give you wisdom that you don't have to pay for. Because there's two ways you can get wisdom. You can either pay for it from mistakes, or you can let somebody gift it to you. And that's what a mentor does. You need a spiritual director because the spiritual director helps you recognize the work of God in your life and the rhythm in which he's leading you. And so they really help you recognize that. We need a counselor. We all need a counselor. We need people that help us see the wounded, hurt places in our life and how they're affecting us now and how they're keeping us from living in the joy and purpose that God has for us. And what a coach does is a coach is someone who draws out of you realities about yourself that I thought you did great there describing, Chad and Brenton, both that, you know, it may be an aspirational desire or hope or value, but there's not some aspect of your person, a limiting belief, a habit practice, a belief system, a structure system, whatever it may be, that's not allowing you to live out what is the way in which you want to live. And, you know, and I will say it really comes from me because I used to be, I was a high school basketball coach for years. Then I became for my daughter, a middle school girls lacrosse coach. And what a good coach does, whether it's business or ministry or athletics, is they believe for you and about you in a way that you don't believe about yourself yet. And they help you do what you weren't sure you could do and live in a way you're not sure you can live. And so what coaching has been for me is really a therapeutic process of God restoring in me what was never given to me. I came out of a movement that didn't believe in church planting. And the first thing I did was plant a church. So you're talking about the wounding of that process, and then, you know, and all the different ministry steps of obedience in my life. There was not support systems. There was not people there to encourage me, to help me process hurts and disappointments and all those things. And what God has done for me is allowed for me to walk with business people and ministry people and educators and counselors, walk through that process together and help them dream and believe to do the things that God's placed in their heart and walk them out in incredible ways.
That's good. That's a great way to put it. Because I almost can track my life ministry-wise before coaching, right, BC, and after, right? Because it's really that simple. Because I loved how you said that it was someone seeing things in me and helping draw them out, but getting me to be able to come to a space of being able to actually recognize it where it sticks, and I was able to kind of walk it out. Well done. Thank you. Thank you for that.
Absolutely.
All right. We'll get you out on this one. Okay. If that's all right. So as we enter into the new year, and you've got, you know, like I said, we're focused on what's ahead, and then we're being obedient and trying to find our identity within Christ first as we move forward through then. So then as people are setting the goals and then looking ahead, what's the bit of encouragement, or maybe even if you want to say caution, mm-hmm. you can do that mm-hmm. as well. But what is something that you would say to any ministry leader as they move forward?
I had an older pastor tell me these were the three questions he asked his staff. And I thought they were great questions. And I used it routinely with the people I led. What makes you laugh? What makes you cry? What are you dreaming about? Because we can become so outcome oriented. Well, nothing's making me laugh. Let's figure that out. Mm-hmm. What's making me cry? And if there is tears, then there's the heart of God there. If there's not tears, then there's something we need to look at. And what are you dreaming about? And I think when we look at going forward into this next year, I think really restoring the humanity of our personhood, I think, is the heart of God in this season. And out of that will flow life and life more abundantly.
Yeah.
That's it.
Bingo.
And now I'm going to use those three questions with all that I interact with. So thank you. That was fantastic. Yep.
That was for free. Yep. Thank you. That's called mentor.
I teach those three questions in my college course on coaching. They're just great questions. Doesn't matter if you're in a corporate setting. Doesn't matter if you're in a ministry setting. They're just great questions.
Yeah. Yeah. It really speaks to, like you said, the humanity mm-hmm. of who we are. And so that's fantastic. Yeah. Trey, thank you so much. This has just been, this has been encouraging and inspiring to me. And I know this will be for others as well. And so I just want to say thank you.
Yeah.
Absolutely. My pleasure, guys. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for letting me spend the afternoon with you.
Well, thanks again for joining us for this episode of Ministry Without Hating It. We hope it's helped you take a step further towards loving what you do more through the wisdom of others. We want to again thank today's guest, Pastor, our friend and coach, Trey Abney. Man, just some ministry leader gold there. I hope you're able to take notes or maybe to hit rewind and get that all down. If you'd like to connect further with Trey, we've made ways to do so available in the episode show notes. And if you'd like to connect with us further, support the podcast, or sign up for show updates, just go to linktree.com/withouthatingit, all one word, to get started. And don't forget to subscribe to Ministry Without Hating It wherever it is that you get your podcast, so you don't miss our future episode releases. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.